What's up, champs? Welcome to another episode of the Short Shifts Fantasy Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Keeping Carlson. I'm your host, Jeremy Versillo. Joining me tonight, my pal and yours, Shams Benamor. Shams, how are you doing this Thursday evening that hockey kind of restarts after a weird late night on Wednesday because of the frozen frenzy on Tuesday?
Oh, just here on time, so Elon, don't punish me and make me sit out a podcast, so I'm here on time, ready to go, and do it a little bit better than a certain player that we're going to be talking about soon.
And of course, Shams is referring to Matthew Barzal, who's been scratched by the Islanders because he was late to practice this morning. That is such a Islanders, Patrick Waugh move, like old school mentality. I don't necessarily disagree with some sort of punishment for being late, but scratching your best player to play a seventh defenseman is never really a smart move. But then again, the Islanders are a tank job this year, so who cares?
Well, the funny thing is that they're actually planning to bring up Cal Ritchie to replace, and that it was actually bad weather prevented the plane from getting there. So on top of that, then it was a situation where, well, I guess we are out two centers because of our own fault, technically. You know, they could have just called him up earlier because supposedly he's a good guy. But either way, now there's just like playing a seventh defenseman, and I guess they could use eight with the way I think it was like they had like three goals on like seven shots or something on really quick. So just basically a bad time all around there.
Yeah, not pretty for the Islanders, but I guess they got to just get that better draft position. Some injury news hot off the chopping block today. Elias Lindholm, Brock Besser, and Sean Couturier all injured. No real update on any of them. I have heard from friends that the Lindholm one in particular was pretty nasty. So we will have to see how any of those guys are doing. Lindholm and Besser, at least, would be moderate size losses for most fantasy owners. I think Couturier is a bit of a streamer. Anybody you want to speculate on here, Shams, or just wait till we have more info?
So the interesting thing is that, well, first is just as of this moment, they've declared Brock Besser to not return to the game. So all three are officially out for the remainder. And I'm with you that Couturier may be the least like fantasy interesting, but they are just so bereft of like centers in general that he might, if he's out long term, might just hurt the overall function of the team. Because I think he's able to take away of those like annoying minutes to let a Zegras or those other offensively talented players produce. But like, if you're going to start telling, you know, Zegras or whoever, like Dvorak, to be the shutdown center, that could start kind of tumbling down and just making everyone else's day worse.
Zegras, if you mention, is having a great game today. He's got 3 points tonight and still a bit of that game to go. I think he may be the biggest beneficiary of Couturier being out, just going to have to step up and play more minutes. Other players with some big games recently on Tuesday's Frozen Frenzy, Victor Golofsson had 3 goals, 2 assists, 7 shots, big breakout game, really vaulting him into a fantasy relevant per game average off of one game. He's an interesting one because he's only 80% owned in Kakupfel. I feel like his value is entirely based on his power play time because he's on the third line at even strength, and his shots have been very inconsistent. He's had 2 games with 7, 2 games with 5, 3 games with 2, and 4 games with 1. If he can consistently shoot 3 to 5 shots a game and get that power play one-timer off of those sweet MacKinnon passes, I think he's going to be great value. But their upcoming schedule is iffy, and you know, he had 1 good game to make up for a bunch of mediocre ones. How interested are you in adding Victor Olofsson?
I look at Olofsson the same way as I do with like Bjorkstrand, as these like people that are like lower in the lineup but are on power play, one of interesting teams. They're basically like almost like streaming a goalie, but are like they can't go negative. Is that there's a good chance that you could just end up with a zero or like basically something that's like nothing, or they could do the equivalent of a shutout and get like 12 points because they got 2 goals and like a couple of shots. So it's one of those things, is that like, I know certain people hate goalies because they just hate the variance in the scoring. This is basically just the equivalent of like, yeah, be careful on those busy days. That could be the day that you bench him, and that's the day he got the hat trick, and then every other day he got zero. But like, if that's something where, you know, it's hard to find points or you're fine to take that ride, I'm interested, and then just pay attention to the lines, because the second he's off that top power play, his value like plummets.
On the flip side, maybe there's some upside if he gets put on one of the top two lines, or really just the top line. I'm not that interested in the Brock Besser centered line in, or not Brock Besser, Brock Nelson centered line in Colorado. A couple other players who had big games. Connor Bedard got his first NHL hat trick, looking great this year. I think the fact that they have a second viable NHL quality line with Nazar centering is really helping him open it up. And then I just have to shout out Matthew Olivier and Charlie Coyle, both had 4-point nights for Columbus yesterday. If you happen to stream them, which I had Olivier in a couple leagues, I know people who streamed Coyle, kind of one of those weird ones where you're digging deep in these crappy weeks. So congrats on your 12 or 15-point night. Just don't hold on too long. Like, I've already kicked Olivier to the curb, even though he had a great game for me and dragged me back into a matchup. Some positives here. Matthew Schaefer and Ben Kindle are both playing their 10th game tonight, which means they are burning the first year of their ELC and not going back to junior. I think that's not a surprise, but a bit of a sigh of relief for Matthew Schaefer owners. Gave you a power play goal for it. I would have been very surprised if they sent him back, but given the quality of that team, maybe they had reason to. I'm also very curious what you think, Shams. Matthew Schaefer is 18, but he only turned 18 like a month and a half ago. He only played 26 games across all levels last year, and there's always that rookie wall that some of these younger players hit, especially as a defenseman. It's not often you see an 18-year-old defenseman playing that many games in the league. Are you trying to sell high here, or are you just enjoying Schaefer as found money because he was like a 15th round pick?
Honestly, at this point, unless someone is giving you like the farm, I am holding on. Like, as someone, this is coming from someone that has a mix of injuries and maybe some of my draft picks not working out, is that if I had anyone of that quality, like, I would be probably more interested in trading other D just to make sure that you have space. Say if you like picked them off a free agency, if you're in a shower league, or if like you picked them last as your fifth. Like, I am a fan of, like, I'm not the best trader. The way I look at it is, if I got something this good, and really, if it's not like, say, they have someone at the wings that's injured that's going to take a spot when they're coming, it's, we're just kind of trying to guess if he gets cold. I'm just willing to just ride this, just take all the points, because the last thing I would want is just to trade him away and he's just like producing this way the whole season. Because basically, if I remember correctly, even before like a week or so ago, I forget if it was the GM or the coach was basically joking, talking to the GM of the AHL team, saying, hey, just said, let you know, you're never seeing this guy. Like, they were basically like making it overly obvious that they're over the moon. They have him top power play. They have him played all these things. It's that, like, this is just one of those guys that as a top, like literally the first pick, he has the pedigree. He has the trust. He shows he can do it. If he hits the wall, he hits the wall, but I'm not scaring myself of like a hypothetical thing. Even if I do agree, the odds are you're going to hit a wall, but maybe he comes out of it later and still be fine.
I think you've got the right of it. I've got Matthew Schaefer on my Kakupful team. He is actually the fourth defenseman I drafted, but he is the highest performing of them. I don't intend on letting him go for anything. I think it's always nice to have a bunch of defensemen you can rely on. So I'm happy with the found money here, where I did not spend a high draft pick and got one I can trust. Some actually, one more call up. Dalibor Dvorsky is called up for the St. Louis Blues. He is a first-round draft pick from a couple years ago, got some strong pedigree, and 5 points in 6 AHL games in Springfield. He should see some power play time and on the second unit, but I suspect not. He's only going to be playing until Robert Thomas returns, which we don't really know when that is. But good for him. They've got a good schedule next week, so if it looks like Thomas is out a bit, you can get him in your lineup for the Monday-Wednesday games next week. Anything to add here, Shams?
It's the nice thing is he's, while he's on the second power play unit, is that the interesting thing with the Blues, even though they're not playing that well, is they have like so many medium forwards that he's still playing with like Snuggerud and Suter. Like, so it's not like, you know, some of the second power plays you see are just like bereft of talent. So maybe he might be able to get something out of there. So, but yeah, it's in the end, it's a prospect. We don't know how well he could play. Maybe he turns it on. Depends on how interested in risk you're taking. But at this moment, the whole team's not looking that hot. So I wouldn't be rushing to pick him, but just kind of keep an eye.
Now we can jump to the outjuries. Got a couple outjuries here. Chris Kreider looks like he's back from his illness, playing on the line with Carlson and Terry. Not sure what line number that is. Alexander Romanov is activated off IR, and he may be a good peripherals guy for you. I think he has a hit and a block so far this game. The Washington Capitals have Dylan Strome and Rasmus Sandin hurt. They aren't playing. I guess they aren't playing today. The team isn't playing today, but Carberry hasn't ruled out them playing this weekend. Strome was in a regular jersey for part of practice. And then one other update. Vancouver update. Connor Garland and Quinn Hughes are not traveling with the team, but hoping that they could, that Hughes at least can join the team in either Minnesota or Nashville. Any thoughts on these injury updates? Anyone you're super interested in?
So the top thing, the two that I'm interested in, is the first thing is don't get cold feet on Romanov, because we did speak about earlier is that they're in a weird situation. They actually have seven defensemen, so his minutes may not be the highest, and he's kind of a bangers guy that really depends on those minutes. So today I would just, whatever points you get or whatever, just, you know, take them as you come, and then just kind of maybe give a few more days where he actually has a six defenseman set up and he can play the full amount before you start saying, hey, is this a good ad or should I drop? And then on top of that is that Chris Kreider is that he is, I would say personally, at least at the moment, is that I look at the top six for the Ducks as kind of the important lines. The third line is starting to see less ice time. And then you got like the guys like Killorn and like Vetrano, that was kind of like the old regime's people. So being on a line with Carlson and Terry, we didn't see any power play, but he was really hot on that top power play unit that's starting to see more time versus in the past where it was 50-50. So depending on like if you're a shallower league or if someone had to maybe drop Kreider because of like injury issues and had a full IR situation, I would be pretty interested in Kreider just because I think he has a potential to buck the Ducks' trend of like actually getting a decent amount of ice time and getting good deployment overall.
I would definitely be interested in Kreider. Unfortunately, he's 100% owned in Kakupful. I was a bit surprised he hadn't been dropped by one or two injury desperate teams. Romanov's only 49% owned and plays Friday, Sunday this week in addition to tonight. You're right about the ice time. He's pacing for about 18 minutes tonight. I suspect that'll be closer to 20 when they only have six defensemen as opposed to seven. And yeah, I don't think I have strong opinions on anybody else there. Last two real quick. Zach Hyman will be out for at least another week. I know November 1st was the initial target for his return from injury, but sounds like he'll be a little bit after November 1st, but it's still pretty close. And then the Flyers place Sam Ursina on IR, which means that Dan Vladar is the main goalie in Philly. He's looking pretty good tonight. I think they've got a 3-1 lead or something. That may just be a straight-up starter situation with the guy they just acquired, because the rest of their goalies suck.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, if you're coming off the PatriotCast, they were talking about it. I caught a little bit before starting here, is that if I remember correctly, they had like a top five defense last year, if you look at the advanced metrics, and then literally last place goaltending. So what I would be interested in is, if I remember correctly, I believe they have a back-to-back this week. So, yeah. So basically, I'm guessing that Vladar will be playing the Saturday game against the Leafs. But whoever, I think it's like Kolosov or whoever's going to be playing that Sunday game against the Flames, I might be more interested if you're looking for your Sunday saviors. I know the Flames are not the hottest offensive team. I'll be honest, any goaltender that's not Vladar or Ersson is like not NHL caliber. I would be tempted to start like rising up those Flames up the rank if you're looking for that like one game guy that randomly needs to get like a goal and an assist to save you on Sunday.
Or even the Flames goalie if you want to try to get a goalie wing win, because I assume that Devin Cooley is going to get the Sunday game for the Flames, given that Dustin Wolf will get Saturday. With that, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The NBA season tips off, and so does DraftKings' newest fantasy game. DraftKings Pick 6 is the easiest way to play for big wins, with every possession giving you a shot at real money. Here's how to play. Just pick more or less on two or more stats and unlock the upside every game brings. Pick 6 is available in Texas, California, Missouri, and more. New DraftKings customers get $50 in bonus picks with just a $5 entry on your first pick set. Don't just watch basketball. Cash in. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN. Play just $5. Get $50 in Pick 6 bonus picks. Make the call. Ride the upside in partnership with DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-778-9777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 plus. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable. Pick 6 bonus picks that expire in 14 days. Limited time offer. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Welcome back, everyone. Now that we're a bit into the season, we can actually do some hot-cold, which we've struggled to do on, you know, a three-game sample size in previous weeks. First hot streak I'd like to pull up is William Eklund in San Jose. He's got 8 points in his last four games, hasn't had less than three shots in the last six games. The last two games, he saw 25-29 and 24-46 time on ice, and only one of those went to OT. Despite playing without Celebrini, he's putting up solid numbers. I think it's a similar situation, as I mentioned at the top, to Frank Nazar in Chicago, where Nazar and Eklund are on their respective second lines, but Bedard and Celebrini's first lines are drawing so much attention from opposing teams that the second line all of a sudden has a bunch of scoring opportunities. On top of, they're both on power play one. I know people in my allied chat are really on Nazar a lot. I think Eklund is the more sustainable choice here. Like, if I had the opportunity to flip Frank Nazar for William Eklund, I would do that in a heartbeat. He's a winger instead of a center, and the underlying numbers, both the his personal shooting percentage is 13.8, which is pretty in line with the 11.3 and 12.5 from his last two seasons. And his teammates are shooting 8% with him on the ice at even strength, which is totally sustainable. Eklund's IPP is a bit high. He's factored into 83.3% of the goals that the team has scored with him on the ice at even strength. That number is probably supposed to be closer to 70 for his level of player. And lastly, his PDO is low at a 946. But honestly, that may be his true talent level, given how bad the Sharks goaltending is. They may just run like an 850 save percentage with him on the ice, which would bring down your PDO. Shams, what do you think of William Eklund? What do you think of my comparison to Frank Nazar?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I would take Eklund above Nazar. And the nice thing is that, like, I won't go through the whole quote, but I believe it was on, we have it on Game Day tweets, but basically the coach is just in love with his play. So it's not like one of those situations where maybe you got a couple of cheap points or doing things. It's basically, the quote is effectively saying he's doing all the right things and he's getting rewarded for it and he's growing as a player. So basically, the way I look at Eklund on top of that is that with that power play and on top of it all is that there is zero chance, or maybe not zero, but a very minimal chance that they make Nazar a wing on Bedard. But there is a non-zero chance to say to Foley and Eklund swap. And then you got top-line, top power play as well, or like he replaces like Will Smith. Like, there's a chance that Eklund could even get better deployment, even with the current deployment being fine enough. So I would be 100% on the Eklund trade. I believe he's rostered in the spots I'm in, because I was just kind of having it high a little too much and be like, is this sustainable or not? But I feel like in a situation, unless you're in like an extremely shallow league, I am fine with any of the Sharks' power play one guys.
I agree. The Sharks power play one seems pretty talented. I do think, like you said, there's a chance that Eklund ends up on the first line. I could see that being one of those things that they shift to in competitive games for the second half of the third period, you know, start short shifting some guys, maybe move Will Smith down to center at some points, which I know the team talked all summer about how they liked Will Smith better as a center, and he is playing right wing all season. So goes to show coach speak is not something you can pay too much attention to. Another nice thing, actually, real quick about Eklund is he's on pace for about 60 hits and 60 blocks, which is pretty good for a forward, especially a young one. So it's like, it's nice. It's not a guy who's going to get you 20 hits and 20 blocks, which a lot of forwards do. He'll be a bit better in those categories. Onto a cold streak. Sam Bennett only has 2 points this season and is not on power play one currently, despite all the injuries the Panthers have. What's going on here? Is this just the Florida Stanley Cup hangover times three? Are there better days ahead for Sam Bennett, Shams?
I think it's one of these situations is that, like, basically it got to a point where the injuries just mounted up. Like, I feel like we're at a point where he has always been the kind of grinder kind of person that wasn't really the points guy, and then the points would just kind of help the, like, peripherals become something. But without Tkachuk, without Barkov, I forget off the top of my head, they're like, they may not be fantasy relevant, but they even have injuries on the defensemen. So, like, their back end is not even at the greatest point. So just their overall team level is just kind of cold that I have, like, no interest. Like, for example, he's been dropped in, like, a league or two that I'm in. And at no point did I think of, like, oh, should I, like, do a bid or do a thing? Like, I'm at the point that I'm not sure I want to use a move. I'm not even talking about, like, investments or dropping people or anything. My brain's like, do I even want to spend a move on him? Now, once we get, like, later down the road where Tkachuk's back and then, like, maybe they put them together, is that, like, honestly, you got Reinhardt. After that, like, maybe you could make an argument for Frehage, but, like, he hasn't been the same after, like, his, like, scorching hot, like, 2 years ago. Is that, who is he even centering? Like, Marchand seems to be, like, tied to Lundell, that, like, because they play so well together, that, like, I'm not really sure as much, like, points to go around in the first place, and he's less likely to make his own points that, like, he needs the people around him to do it, that I would just be not really that much interested unless you're in a categories league that really likes the hits and blocks. But, like, the last two games, like, he literally against Vegas had a block in the whole game on 13 minutes, and then he had a shot, a hit, and a block in 16 minutes against Anaheim. So he's not even getting the minutes that, like, I'm not sure. Unless you're in the deepest of leagues where, like, hell, you know what, honestly, I might be, this might turn into a cold take. I'm not sure in any league, unless you're, like, in a dynasty league where you have to, like, do buyout costs. Like, if you're a free cut, I'd be looking to get rid of them.
So it sounds like you're giving the patrons, or not just the patrons, the listeners, permission to drop Sam Bennett. I'm not quite there yet, partially because of the long-term potential. You mentioned that once Chuck is back, that could go a bit better. Part of the problem I think the Panthers have right now is I don't think they have a single player on their current roster who is a true play driver in the way that, you know, McDavid, McKinnon, obviously, but like Panarin, Kaprizov, Kucherov. Sam Reinhart's almost always been a secondary. He's more the Mark Stone to your Jack Eichel than your true, like, do-it-all player. And he's even struggled too. Sam Reinhart has 6 points in 11 games. The only reason his head's above water is because he's shooting a lot and he has 5 goals. And then you've got, like you said, Verhaeghe and Marchand and Lundell, and Samoskevich looks pretty nice with the increased ice time. And Bennett, there's just nobody who's like the true play driver on any of those lines. And I'm hoping once Matthew Tkachuk comes back, there will be better days ahead for at least two of those players, and hopefully Sam Bennett is one of them. So yeah, I'm holding out a bit longer, but I do see where you're coming from, that Sam Bennett may not be long for your roster.
So just to kind of add to the point is that he's literally, as of the last game, his wingers are Boqvist and Greer, just a show of just like the situation where they literally have Rodriguez as a center with Verhaeghe and Reinhart. Like, they're telling us what they think of him at, from an offensive standpoint. That, and the one thing is that I'll buck on your side of just kind of, hey, if like Matthews comes back, or Tkachuk comes back, is that how many weeks is that even going to be? If I'm in a league where I could burn a roster spot that long to hope, I'm going to be in a position that I could probably find someone better at that time than to have a hopefully better that, like, now this isn't a situation where you could do free moves, redraft leagues. That's what I'm talking about. But like, I would be starting with the reason of why shouldn't I drop him versus why should I drop him? That's the way I would look at my team when I'm doing this decision.
That's fair. And especially as a pure center, there's a lot of those floating around that can probably give you equivalent points, or you turn it into a streamer spot and get four games every week. Actually, I'm going to jump around here because here's a pure center that you might want to replace Sam Bennett with if he's available in your league. Marco Rossi has been quite hot lately. He has 5 points in his last three games before tonight. He had another point tonight. He's shooting 2 to 3 times per game, and he does have a lot of power play points despite being on the second unit, which is maybe a bit of a red flag. But when you're centering Kirill Kaprizov at even strength, I kind of like having you on my team. Are you swapping in Rossi and swapping out Bennett? I think I would.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Basically, the way I look at it is that you get to have... they seem to be adverse, and I understand why, because they don't have like all the depth. They don't want to have Boldy and Kaprizov on the same line. So there's a good chance that even if there's like random flipping or whatnot, that you're going to have one of those players on his wing. And what that idea is that the even strength should be strong enough that like even they haven't been scoring as much as they have. It's been all power play for a while. So once the even strength goals start coming, he's going to be in a position to get the assist or get the rebound to get the goals. So I am really up on a Rossi with the understanding that like, if you see that if they go nuclear and put like Eriksson Ek with Boldy and Kaprizov and then leave him with like Johansson or like a random guy, then I'd be worried. But as long as he's with one of those two big guns at even strength, there's a level of interest in me in like most leagues.
I would be surprised if they use Eriksson Ek as like their big offensive guy, because we even saw part of it last year where it seemed like they were actually favoring Rossi in offensive situations in order to save Eriksson Ek as the shutdown potential future Selke winner type of guy. So I'm very bullish on Rossi just because of the team context. I think he's going to get thrown out there as the wizard playmaker type of guy instead of Eriksson Ek. And I think he's firmly cemented himself as at the very least one of their top two centers, one of their power play options, even if it's on the second unit, and a guy that's going to be out there for 6-on-5. I also think that they're probably going to ditch Tarasenko on that first power play and put Rossi up there pretty soon. It was great for the first couple games, but Tarasenko hasn't done anything on that first power play in a while, so I'd be surprised if he stays there much longer, or honestly, if he stays healthy much longer. Another cold streak. Clayton Keller has 0 points in his last three. This does come after a torrid stretch where he had a bunch of multi-point games in a row. He's still shooting. He's still getting the ice time. Although one thing I've kind of noticed this year with the Utah Mammoth is I think the Cooley-Ginther-Pitecherka line is just better than the Keller-Schmaltz-Hayton one. I feel like every time I look at that game, it's Cooley, Ginther, and Pitecherka like absolutely hemming in whoever they're playing against. And I think Ginther and Cooley have at least 2, maybe 3 overtime goals today, this year. So I'm not dropping Clayton Keller. I'm not trading him, but I do see this as a cold streak and potentially maybe he's not the guy he was in previous years.
So the scary thing is that like, I'm in a shower league in my home league and I actually kept Keller. And the thing is that what's, adding a little bit of concern for me is that like, say, for example, at the start of the season, Tage Thompson wasn't getting any goals, but like we could say, oh, he was unlucky because of like post or good goalie saves. Now, I know expected goals is not the perfect answer, but in his last three games, Keller had, this is according to Hockey Viz, 0.08, 0.22, and 0.1. And on top of this, is that sure you could talk about, oh, what are these numbers? The worst part of it all, too, is that in the first and the third one, he was like almost the last place, according to both forwards and defensemen. And then even that 0.22, maybe he was in the middle, is that like, he's not even like producing situations to be put into goals. So maybe he might get some shots, but maybe they're from the outside. So of course, we're talking three games. It's not the end of the world. But the thing is that this is a situation where for whatever reason, he's not in a position to be getting those points. And I'm with you, is that if I was a winger, I would want my centerman to be Cooley over Hayton. And Hayton has his ability. And while Schmaltz seems to be getting points, I would definitely want, you know, one of Genther or Paterka probably over him as my line mate. So he's worse in both positions in that situation. So it's just kind of an odd situation to be in. But hopefully, you know, it wasn't like he just got a lot of points last year. He has been a serviceable fantasy player. So I'm not worried setting up the alarms to be like everything's going downhill. But these last three games, I'll have to be honest, were concerning.
I think Nick Schmaltz is possibly one of the most overperforming players right now. I think at one point earlier this week, he was actually the number one player in Kekupfel scoring, which is obviously not sustainable. I've enjoyed the ride in the few places I have Nick Schmaltz, but expect him to come down to earth. And, you know, expecting the centerman to come down to earth for the winger we're talking about does not necessarily portend well. Again, not sounding any alarms here, just something to keep an eye on that, you know, Keller doesn't quite look like he did in previous seasons. One more set of hot and cold defensemen of each. Our hot defenseman is Brant Clark. He has 5 points in his last three games, but his time on ice is still really low. I was surprised to see he was 88% owned in Kekupfel. That may be a little bit because this is a crappy streaming week and everybody needs four defensemen. So all of those 2D, 3D teams have added additional defensemen. Jim Hiller, the coach, also said that he'd like to increase the time on ice for Brant Clark. The team's penalty issues have been impactful because Clark doesn't play the penalty kill, so he's ended up riding the bench a lot when the team takes some penalties. He's leaned on his defensive vets so far and would need to bring down their ice time in order to get Clark in a bit more. So hopefully there's time to see him improve. He's got some blocks too, in addition to the points. What do you think, Shams?
So I was actually kind of interested in that quote when I first saw it. And then I was talking to a friend of mine that's a Kings fan, and he was like, there is zero chance that, like, this is, like, coach speak. So, like, while I do like that he's at least singing the tune, but, like, it is so weird that, like, I remember correctly, like, he is basically, like, from expected goals percentage, not just, like, the best defenseman, but, like, beating, like, Byfield, Kempe, Fial, everyone. So, hopefully we get to a point that Hiller understands, but we've seen how he deploys his defensive team, or just like his team in general in the playoffs, that hopefully we get to a point that he sees the light. But this quote, while nice, I would start needing to see it more before I start seeing it happening, because like this is a team that purposely said, hey, I want Cody Ceci on my team, and I'm going to give him all the minutes and keep giving him the minutes during the situations he's playing, even though that the Edmondson and Clark defensive pair is just outclassing all of them by miles, but just never get to see the ice.
I think that Clark may just not play the LA Kings style of hockey. Like, he's a bit of a freewheeling offensive defenseman, and that's very different than the way LA as a whole has played, honestly, the entire time that Anze Kopitar has been their captain. So it may be a bit tougher for him to prove himself. I do think that the steps I've seen this year are really positive. I'm just skeptical of him as a longer-term hold. because I just don't think the ice time is going to come up, like you were saying. And our cold defenseman here is Cam Fowler. He's only got 2 points on the year, although I believe he picked one up today. He seems to be splitting or having given back the power play one to Justin Falk. He's 84% owned. He does have a good schedule this week and next week, but are people snoozing if they continue holding him throughout the rest of the season?
Honestly, I'm at this point that if the team had 5 games next week and I had an empty defenseman slot, I would be maybe considering elsewhere. Because, like, on top of this is that basically he is giving you 2 shots and maybe a block. And that could be something you might be able to live with if the point potential is there. Say if it's like a Klingberg that's like a top power play on a team or something like that. But we're kind of talking about a Blues team without Robert Thomas that's kind of like in soul searching mode, where like basically they're just not playing well. So you're in a situation that like he got a power play assist today. Nice. But like he literally doesn't have any other stat. So like it could couple with a still 3 points, which is, you know, not horrible, but like not good. So in that situation, like sure, if you have him on your roster now, keep him. Don't use a move if you have, only limited amounts. But I would be shipping him off because I just have no interest in a points-dependent defenseman on a team that's just having a horrendous offensive situation, especially where he is a second power play guy. And hell, the way they have the forwards, even the top power play is like, power play 1.5 at best.
I was kind of skeptical of Fowler last year, even when he had a 10% shooting percentage as a defenseman. That kind of screamed regression to me. So he was not on my draft board anywhere, and I feel vindicated in not having added him at all. That's all we've got time for tonight. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed our show, please consider joining the Keeping Carlson Patreon group at keepingcarlson.com/patron. Super supporters receive ad-free episodes, and you can interact with Brian, Elon, Jams, myself, the rest of the Short Shifts crew, and hundreds of other talented fantasy managers on our active Discord server. Check out www.gamedaytweets.com to get all the best info from Twitter without having to slog through the rest of that place. It includes team by team and searchable tweets by player name. Visit that site and the other great sites we use to research our episodes with at Dahu, Frozen Tools, and Natural Stat Trick. Our intro and outro music were created by Pat Roach. Until we see you next time, play smart and keep your shifts short.